Welcome to the show. Patrick here. Today, a good friend of mine, Luke Fleener, stopped by the studio and we did another quotes episode. Luke brought some of his favorite quotes and we got to chat a little bit about his life, his family, his work. It's a really enjoyable conversation. I think you're going to enjoy it. Again, we're going to be posting the quotes in the show notes, so make sure to check those out. And hey, here's a nice little challenge. If you really enjoy any of the quotes in our quotes episodes, post about them. Put them on your Instagram story, put them on your Facebook, write them down on your mirror in your bathroom. I don't know. Some of these things are really, really fascinating and might be new mantras for you moving forward. Don't forget to follow us on the socials. And also, don't forget to like and subscribe to all of our episodes. Download them. And if you haven't already, please, please, please rate us on iTunes. Because on iTunes, that helps us move up in the rankings. And people search for the Patrick Podcast, they will be able to find us easily when you rate and leave a comment. And again, for those of you that have already done so, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Okay, I think that's all I have for now. Let's check in with Ben. Ben.
Hey.
What's up, man?
Hey, not much. I've got a fact about tea bags in particular that's kind of interesting.
Okay.
Back on the food. We took a little pivot last time, I believe.
What was the... Did we?
Or two times ago. Two times ago. Yeah, yeah. Shoot, I did it to myself. All right. So, the tea bag, the invention of the tea bag is kind of... it's known as an accident, but it really is just like a failed invention, and then it did actually become an invention on accident. So basically, there was a guy who invented a tea leaf holder, which was a cotton mesh bag, and he got a patent for it, and then nothing happened after that.
Sure.
But then there's a different guy who was a tea merchant, and he sold tea and distributed it in these silk bags, and people just started brewing their tea with it in the bag. And then they started getting tea from other places and other people, and it didn't come in the bags, and they got mad about it.
Nice.
And so then, just by demand, the bag became a requirement, and then there you go, tea bags.
I'm glad to know about tea bags now. Enjoy the episode. My goodness. Luke.
Hey, Patrick.
Here we are. You're here on the show.
Yeah.
This is exciting.
What a tough choice. It's been a long time since I've done anything in front of anyone.
Oh, wow. What? Why is that? Is there a reason for that?
Oh, man. I work by myself, for myself. I have some kids. I got out of situations that used to draw me in front of other people at work.
So then I don't think I've ever asked you this question. Are you more introverted or extroverted?
I'm pretty sure I'm extroverted, which means I'm on a pretty weird path here.
That's what I thought. But you like working by yourself for yourself. Yeah.
Usually. Until it gets lonely and isolating, and then it's like, why am I doing this?
So wait, do you do the work, shared workspace? Like, do WeWorks or whatever kind of shared workspaces that are out there in our city?
I have an
office.
We're
not sponsored by WeWorks, by the way, which is unfortunate.
I have done the shared workspace thing.
Uh-huh.
I've done the work at home thing. Now I do rent an office from a company who has like multiple people in the office kind of doing the same thing.
Ah.
But it's not like a co-working space.
Right. It's like a legit office.
Mm-hmm. But it's everybody else is kind of
on their own.
On their own for sure, and then more experienced in their careers.
Okay, gotcha.
So they're not in the office as much as I am.
Yeah, so they're traveling, they're taking meetings and all yep. that kind of stuff. So, okay, we kind of like jumped right into the thing, but today's a quote episode.
All right.
But before we get to your quotes, Luke, you and I, we've known each other
it's got to be right after the millennium.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's been a minute. We've been in this friendship for a while. We both went to school together. We've been in other communities and groups together, kind of like in shared spaces in that capacity. Yeah.
I think I probably met you as joke telling Patrick Chappelle.
Oh, Luke,
is that a life?
We were talking about this the other night. That will be a segment of the Patrick podcast.
Is that a life gone by, or is that do you pull a joke telling Pat out every once in a while?
No, I do not. I do not.
I had an old character named Creepy McCreeps. I don't pull him out anymore.
Yeah, wait, are you serious? You were at Impact?
Oh, yeah.
Which is for those of you who are new to the Nashville Lipscomb community, Impact is a camp or youth camp that happens on the campus of Lipscomb University, and I am one of the main characters on stage.
You're several of the main characters on the stage.
I am the main black person. And by main, I mean only.
Yeah. I got it. I got your drift there. I think I knew where that was headed. So I started going there in 2000.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You for sure.
I was a sophomore in high school.
Anyway, that's a minute.
What a good time, though.
What a good time.
That was a good time.
I'm still doing it.
I would still do it, probably.
So you live here in Nashville, Tennessee, mm-hmm. Working for yourself, wife.
I'm 10 years married.
10 years.
To the love of my life.
That is amazing. That is absolutely, that's been 10 years?
Yes.
One of, and I know this will be hard for some other people that I know to hear, one of the best weddings and wedding receptions I've ever been to. Still.
And
I still remember things
with a high level of difficulty. No booze.
Yeah, that's right. There were zero booze. I don't know if I was zeroed boozed, but there were no.
I was, Mom. And
yeah. Luke had no booze at all.
The crazy thing about that wedding was the transformer blew in the backyard.
I remember that.
And so the band had to cut off.
Yeah.
And we started singing a cappella.
Yeah.
To keep dancing.
Yeah.
I looked over. A friend of mine was pouring a pitcher of water on another friend of mine.
And again, this is a no alcohol
wedding. Are you talking about
wedding.
The wedding, this or is are you talking about Impact?
I'm talking about the wedding reception. The wedding reception.
This is the reception. Yeah.
Wow.
That's amazing. So now you have a couple kids.
Mm-hmm.
Doing that
two thing. Little girls, a six-year-old and a four-year-old, they talk more than me and my brothers did. I can tell you that they are unbelievably awesome.
That's amazing.
I think you know, I grew up with two brothers.
Yeah,
we've probably already surpassed the word count in six years than my brothers and I did in 18 years at our house.
Yeah, because I feel like with it, for you and your brothers that I know too, it's like there's spurts. It's like there's long times of silence.
Long times of silence.
But then there's like lots of talking, and then there's back to long.
Yeah.
So after this, you're probably going to be silent for
the rest of the day.
The rest of the day is done.
Yeah. Or maybe we just didn't like talking to each other. Who knows?
So look, okay, that we've heard about your work, you got your family. This is great. Let's hop into some quotes because, and let me say this while you're looking it up as a reminder to everyone. I love when we do these episodes because I truly believe that everyone, male, female, young, old, are collecting and have these quotes, wise words, wise perspectives, interesting ways of looking at things. Everybody has them. And they either help us kind of like center ourselves back to one, or they help us make sense of life and give language to a situation that we were unable to give it because we just weren't ready to put those words together. But this quote, this passage, this song lyric, this thing that my aunt said at a cookout one time that stuck with me forever and ever. Like, we all just have those. And so I'm always excited to introduce our audience to new quotes that maybe they hear something today or in other episodes in the past where it's like, oh, that's what I've been trying to say the whole time. So thanks for coming.
You bet.
Doing that. All right, let's hear one. Let's talk about it.
Well, this first quote is one that my aunt told me at a cookout.
Are you serious?
No. I'm going to let you down on the like personalized quotes.
That's good. That's fine.
Yeah, except one is super personal because it's my quote.
Ooh.
Anybody ever gone that narcissist in here?
No, but I like it.
All right. I'm going to go with first on my list of four, which... good luck if we don't get to all four, cutting that out. Restart.
Okay, list of four.
I've done enough video to do that. Okay, Patrick, here's my first quote.
First quote.
Next to love, balance is the most important thing.
Ooh.
John Wooden.
Let's go, Johnny. Here, let me hear that again.
Yep. Next to love, so he gets love right up there.
Right.
Where we all want it.
Right.
Comma. Balance is the most important thing.
How important is that comma?
Grammatically, I think we'd have to say it's super appropriate.
Right. So when, okay, do you remember when you first came across that quote?
I think that was college-ish.
College-ish. Now,
my assumption is I read that in a book.
Okay.
But more of like a business, like self-help type book.
Right. So when you read it for the first time, how did it hit you the first time you heard that quote versus how it hits you right now as a father with two kids?
So if I'm 23 years old and I hear that quote, I'm probably feeling a little bit of relief.
Yeah.
Because I feel like when you're young and you're going, you're kind of looking ahead at your life, you're like, I got to put my head down and accomplish something.
Right.
And nobody is kind of saying like, hey, you need it all across your entire life to be equally yoked.
Yeah.
And me, my like inner person, I want nothing more than to like kind of be at peace.
Mm-hmm.
And so balance is like this idea that
right.
I will latch onto and go, yep, gotta have that.
Gotta have that.
Gotta have that.
Huh.
Now, I'll say, like with any quote,
sure.
So I was thinking about this yesterday. Any quote, one of the first things I do is critique it really hard and go, well, here's all the ways that quote is an overgeneralization and it shouldn't be followed
absolutely.
To the letter of the law.
Absolutely.
I don't actually think we can achieve balance.
Whoa.
Like, for instance, work-life balance, I probably think is a myth.
Well,
work's part of your life.
Work's part of your life. And what is that even... And I guess, and again, what I've been saying recently is we've got to get back in the business of redefining what we mean with what we say. Whenever we're saying, we need to redefine it.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to, exciting, because when someone says work balance, okay, what do you mean by work balance? Because I think everyone has a different, because some people work balance is 80-hour work week. Oh, that's work balance, baby. I'm balancing all the different things and opportunities and tasks that I have, and I'm giving myself fully to this work experience because I'm here to do a thing, and let me do it with all that I have, right? But, yeah. So you say it's just a big myth anyway.
Well, I'm reading a book that says it's a big myth, so I'm trying to take that on right now in my life
right.
And go, okay, how would it be a myth? But, and I don't want to undercut my quote here because my quote still has lots of
I love the quote.
But the work-life balance myth kind of says that, hey, at any point in your life, if you want to make strides, you're probably going to have to become unbalanced in one area. And so across work, self, and your relationship with others,
mm-hmm.
This is from The Three Marriages.
Right.
A great book. It's kind of saying, hey, it's not a puzzle. The pieces don't just fit neatly together. It's more like three islands where the water is coming up on the shore and coming back and moving differently across the three islands to fit the land together, or to give the geography. And at any given time, like, one island might be smaller than another one.
Right.
But it doesn't mean that they don't still live on, like, strong foundations.
But I guess, the question would be, how do you, in that analogy, how do you build the good foundations? What does that look like? Could that look like?
Yeah.
Because I think you're right, but I think for some people, they even struggle with...
Well, okay.
Yeah.
Let's treat them not as islands, but platforms that you have to build.
Yeah.
You can't build all three platforms at once.
No.
So you're probably going to have to dive in on one specific area.
Right.
First, and focus more on that one to build that foundation up before mm-hmm. you can move on and build the second foundation and the third foundation.
Yeah. And I think probably what I've seen in people is we're not good at saying, okay, this is enough.
This one's built.
This one's built.
Yeah.
This is enough.
But you become so obsessed
mm-hmm.
with building that one platform.
Either one. Right. All three. With any of them.
And you dive in.
Right.
And you don't even know when you're too... So...
That's right.
When I think of the quote, next to love, balance is the most important thing, I think of it as a macro idea. Over the course of my entire year, decade, life, I want to be balanced and give credence to and value to my work, to my relationship with others, and to knowing myself.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, because it's true, I love the quote because it says, next to love, because love is a thing that we all should be striving for. Love of self, like taking, and not like being obsessed with self or being narcissistic, but just loving myself, loving others, loving, if you're a spiritual person, loving God or whatever that may be, but loving is all kind of wrapped up in that. But I think you're right. Like, I think, and I believe that there's lots of sacred teachings that say something about balance.
Oh yeah.
And it's like, that's the...
Another word I think of is moderation.
Yeah, exactly.
When it comes to balance.
Exactly.
Which, you know, when I get too into one thing and then I look up, you know, 3 weeks later and go, oh, I was like really numbing out mm-hmm. on this one thing. What was I sleeping to?
Right.
In the rest of my life?
Yeah. Because that's good language. And I think no matter who you are, you're likely asleep to something.
Oh yeah.
And like, I don't want to be too aggressive, but like, honestly, you are asleep to something right now.
I'm asleep to music right now.
Yeah. That's odd. Yeah.
So I'm
especially for you.
This is a very like simplified take. I rarely listen to music anymore. I like to listen to music. I've never been like a music head like you or Ben out there. But music can bring me joy, make me feel relaxed.
Right.
But every time I hop in the car, I'm putting a podcast on.
So you've now fully committed to the podcast.
Yeah, and it's like I'm like unable to moderate in the area.
Yeah.
Like how many golf podcasts can one person listen to?
A lot.
Before it's like, oh, like you're good.
No, but I mean, but how many, for me, how many indie rock songs can I listen to? Where it's like, I've had enough.
Yeah.
I know, I want more.
I said to my wife the other day, I feel overwhelmed by my podcast inbox. I can't keep up with it. It sounds exhausting, but I'll get through it.
Okay.
What? Maybe just delete some.
No.
And
can't
go
do
listen
that.
To some music.
But deleting a podcast is the only way that can happen is if the podcast operates in seasons. And you say, okay, this season's over.
You know, this point exactly.
Yeah.
Some of these new television shows that only have 5 or 6 episodes.
You love them.
Kudos, man.
Yeah.
Like
the British shows are like that.
Yeah.
They get it.
Let's just get in and get out. And we don't have to sell commercials for the whole year. Like we don't have to do the 24 episode thing.
No.
And it is much, much better television.
Well, yeah. And I think that's why you see the rise in the HBO shows and Amazon and now Disney and now just the list goes on and on. And it's because people are like, I'm done with like these long seasons and all this kind of nonsense. Anyway. Okay. That was a good quote.
Yeah. Oh, thanks, man. I'll tell John.
Okay.
Isn't it interesting though? Like, I wonder how many basketball coaches have ever actually shared that quote. Because that's not a very basketball coach thing to say.
No. It's not. I mean, like, that's, if anything, they would say there is one platform to build and one only.
Right.
That is this.
That's your jumper.
Yeah, your jumper.
You got to build that J.
That's it. That's all I need. Okay, let's give us another one.
All right, here's number two. Less, but better. Dieter Rams. Rams. It depends on if you speak German or not, how well you say his name.
Right.
Less, but better.
But better.
Kind of part of the essentialism movement.
Yeah.
So Rams, so self-conscious saying his name, because I'm probably supposed to know more about how to say it. But he's a designer, famous designer. Mm-hmm. He has 10 principles of design. And the last one gets at this particular idea of less but better. And I think he wrote a book called Less But Better. And the idea is that part of the creative process is whittling something down so far to its essence that when it's done, nothing else could be added because you nailed it.
Wow. Which is an interesting quote for you, because a lot of the work that you do in the world is in part creative. Like you.
Yeah. And at times I get paid more to spend more hours, which you would think would make you want to like put more stuff in something.
Yeah.
But think about any great piece of software that you use where you're like, man, that was so easy.
Right.
It's because everything else got stripped away that would have been in the way of accomplishing what you wanted to accomplish.
So why? So, okay. Like I did with the first quote, when did you come across for the first time?
It's probably 6 years ago.
And did it automatically connect you to the work that you were doing at the time, whatever that was? Yeah.
Because, you know, so what I do a lot of is interface design,
mm-hmm.
user experience, user interface design. And part of what that work is removing distraction that could create confusion in the user's mind when they're trying to use the software to accomplish something.
Right.
Some job.
Right.
And I feel like every time I'm looking at a screen, I'm going, how can we just have less of this screen?
Right.
So that when someone comes here, they have the affordances they need mm-hmm. to do exactly what they need to do.
Sure.
And nothing else gets in the way of them accomplishing that.
So, okay, and here's the question then. We all appreciate that when we're experiencing it, but we don't want it to be true. We don't want that to extend into our entire life.
No, well, you definitely don't, because then we live in houses with, you know, white beds.
We'll live in a Kanye and Kim Kardashian kind of house.
Yeah, I've never seen that house, but I'll take your word for it.
It's essentially this. Like, it's very...
highly minimal.
Yes.
And so I think there's... And I think we've seen this over the last 20 years where design has scaled back. Like, I think about the stuff in Southern Living when I was growing up, the ruffled floral curtains...
That were you a frequent Southern Living?
Well, my mother was. And versus what we see now.
Oh,
Yeah. Where you can like actually see a baseboard in a house.
Yeah.
And so we've moved that direction over time to more simplified design.
Sure.
However, it can feel unwarm,
right?
In certain design situations, like architecture,
yeah,
like interior design, fashion,
mm-hmm.
and you go, man, that's cold. Like that doesn't have enough texture to make me feel warm or
comfy.
Like thought of,
yeah,
comfy. And so we end up with these flourishes that give stuff a little more shape, a little more texture. But I am drawn to the idea of less in general. But the better part is, you know, I'm reminded, I guess it was my grandmother told me that my grandfather believed this. She said he would rather spend a little more money. So that's, I guess, better.
Right.
Hopefully the money equates to quality. Then buy something sooner, but it be cheaper and less well made. So a car, or I find that as I get older, the clothing that I buy might as well be like of good quality rather than cool.
Right.
Because this is me. This is my height. This is how long I'm going to be this height for the rest of the time.
Yep.
And the clothes I buy, I can wear for a long time if they're not like too trendy. And by the way, that's not, you know, I'm not buying trendy clothes, you can tell.
Well, I mean, and I guess, yeah, I mean, there's a, you know, you don't want to be like the kid that whose mom buys him a size too large. Because like you're gonna grow into this.
Yeah, I'm not
like,
growing into it. If I grow into something now, we got a problem.
It's more of like, let me get things that fit, that actually fit my body, that are well made, because I want to buy less of this. So now, how is that for you? Now you've taken on this idea, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you also share living space with three other humans.
For sure.
So have you tried to say, hey, let's all take on this, you know, stripping things down. Let's consume less, whether that's whatever that looks like. Or you just saying, let me try to model this. And hopefully in the modeling of this, you want to join me in this.
Yeah. I feel
how do you work that out? Yeah.
Heather and I track on this idea in most areas of design that become part of a marriage, like home,
yep,
car,
yeah,
clothing. And so we don't have a hard time regulating that.
Sure.
In our marriage, that we have a hard time regulating the better, but better part, where we have to decide, hey, when can we take on better? When is it appropriate
to go better? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That makes sense. That makes sense.
The girls, however, it's a pretty tough concept for them to understand at this point. And we do a little bit to kind of talk about moderation and not getting everything you want when you want it always.
Right.
You know, every time you go to Target, you don't always get a toy.
Mm-hmm.
But we also found that when kids are young and you've got supportive families and friends,
sure,
people just like, you know,
give
in the best way.
Yeah, it's from a good place. It's from a,
and you feel so loved.
Place.
And then you Absolutely. Look up and you're like, where in the world did all these toys come from?
Well, yeah, you see it every 1-year-old's birthday party. It's like the kid would be fine with a box to sit in, and that's all they want. Like
they don't know. We're teaching them that more is better.
And because that is the way that we've regulated, as the way you show love is I buy you a nice gift.
Yeah. And so here's a way we do this. In Heather's family, we don't give gifts to each other for birthdays. We do, however, have a dinner where everyone speaks really nice things about the birthday person.
See.
So that is less in terms of like materialism.
Absolutely.
But it is better in terms of quality.
Yeah. Yeah. Because now you're...
And by the way, I would way rather get that for my birthday, as it turns out, than like a new pair of Air Maxes, which I really want,
by the way. If somebody wants to get us both pairs, let me know.
Preferably early 90s Air Maxes.
But I mean, that's so true. That's a wonderful practice.
And I think what we would find out in the end is that the less is actually the more.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and even in that, you know, in your example of the dinner, is we don't realize how much we actually desire to hear our family members say nice, encouraging, wonderful, like direct things to us.
A punch in the face.
Yeah.
To go, oh man, I could be speaking this encouragement to people all the time.
All the time. All the time. But yet what we see in a lot of families, this is just a general comment, is just a replaying of old tapes.
Yeah.
We replay the old tapes of the thing you did that one time, and I'm going to make sure you don't forget that you used to do that thing that one time.
Right? Or we get even out of that, and it's more like, where do you want to eat? it just totally...
Well, what do you want to eat?
Passes down.
Yeah.
It gets down to a level where it's just totally at the surface.
So back to this quote, we'll kind of circle back.
Yeah.
You know, do you walk into a meeting with a client, and is this the thing you lead with? You say, okay, here's what I'm all about. Here's the thing.
I will tell clients, if you're looking for something other than sophisticated simplicity, then I might not be your guy. If you're looking for something super flourishy, something with lots and lots of graphics,
I'm not the guy.
Then I'm not a good fit. And there are times where that stuff is appropriate because it might be on brand for what they do or how they speak to their consumers. But
you're not in like a, I'm going to convince you that this approach is the best approach. I'm just going to tell you.
I'm a problem-solving designer.
Okay.
Not a artist, diva, wake up in the morning, got to get my art out.
right.
designer.
Huh. That's so interesting.
Like, don't, I kind of say to people, hey, if you need an artist, it's not what we're doing here. Like, it's going to look good, but
right.
it's going to be of a certain aesthetic.
Huh. So, I don't want to get, let, okay, I'm gonna chase one rabbit.
All right, let's chase it.
And that is, like, how did you get here? Like, how does a guy, so Luke,
there's only so much time in the day.
But, well, here's what I'm saying, though. You're from Kentucky.
Yeah, felt like a shot.
No, not a shot. It's just, here are the facts. You're from Kentucky.
Yeah.
You moved to Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
You probably had dreams and hopes and desires for your life when you moved to Nashville when you were 17, 18 years old. And now here you are, a problem-solving designer, creative, analyst, whatever you want to give it language to. And I'm always like, what? Huh?
Yeah, like, I feel how? The same way. I never would have seen this.
Yeah, that's just like when
I, like you, studied public relations.
Public relations.
And they weren't teaching this.
No. And which is the one of those things which you hear it said in university settings all the time, which is like, we are potentially trying to train you, but probably for a job that doesn't exist right now.
Right.
And it's true.
Like, and the path for me was PR to marketing, marketing to design, design to design technology. You know, once you get to websites, you're kind of on the fast track to right. application design.
Huh.
And I self-taught all of that. Actually, at Ben's father's company.
Wow.
He was my first boss.
Interesting. Okay.
All right.
Next quote. That was good. I like that. I've been trying to do the less thing. I've been trying to get that.
It offers a lot of relief in your life. It kind of goes along with that. Don't over hustle idea. Like,
ooh, wait a minute. Talk to me about
all right,
that.
Here we go.
Don't over hustle. I think that's something we need to, that's a bonus quote.
I have not often been accused of over hustling. There are times in my life where I've like gotten really into one thing.
Right.
And gone down the rabbit trail. But the idea of hustling to me is, let me create worth by working really hard at something so that I can get my worth from that thing I hustled for.
Right.
That's not where we're going to get our worth.
No.
And so if you take that to like the product level, a toothbrush needs to brush your teeth. I call me crazy, don't believe the toothbrush necessarily needs to be able to connect to your Wi-Fi. Same with refrigerators. I don't want a screen on my refrigerator.
Oh, man.
So less but better, and like not over hustling for that product is, hey, let's make the best bristles we can make.
Right.
Not connect the toothbrush to the Wi-Fi.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, you're right.
So if you can like take, if you can put some humanity in that example.
But it's like, that's just the hustle culture is one of the most like palatable cultures that exist.
Oh,
like,
yeah. It's glorified.
It's the hustle, it's the grind, you gotta get after it every single day, whatever that looks like. I was saying this to someone not too long ago, but our parents and even grandparents, they worked a job. One job. That's it. And in all, and truthfully, the same job for like till they were done working.
A lot of those people are still working those jobs, and that's why people our age can't get those jobs.
Please retire.
Yeah. Stop taking your medicine. You. We need you to get out of here.
The assisted living homes are nice. These communities are thriving. But yeah, but I mean, like,
just
that's
kidding, Meemaw.
But I mean, like, it's one of those things where everyone you talk to has two or three
things. At least interests.
Yeah, I'm doing this and I'm doing this and I'm doing this.
Like, imagine me sitting here and saying, I've never thought about what podcast I would start. You know, what a lie that would be.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know. It's just the water we're swimming in right now. Because it hasn't always been this way.
No.
Yeah. Okay. Next quote.
All right. Are you familiar with the card game Rook?
Absolutely.
It's one of my favorite card games.
I can't wait. Let's see where this goes.
So this is my quote.
Oh.
I'm trying to decide what order we have to do this in. Do I have to explain a little bit about Rook first?
Yeah, explain Rook, because people may not know about Rook.
Rook is a game that is based on trumps, kind of like spades.
Right.
Where you got four players, you got two teams, and you're trying to win hands or tricks, as they call them. And the difference between Rook and spades is that in Rook, somebody gets to pick the trump after everyone has seen their cards.
Okay.
And so the way the person gets to pick it is they kind of raise their hand and go, I can get this many points.
Right.
And they're bidding on what's called the kitty. The kitty holds five cards that no one has seen. That may or may not help the person who gets it.
Mm-hmm.
So, as you can imagine, people have different risk tolerances
right.
for going after that kitty.
Yeah.
And saying, I can get that. But the reality is, like, whoever ends up picking the trump has the upper hand
right.
in winning all of the tricks.
Right.
But they've said, I'm going to win at least this many tricks
yeah.
or get this many points because all the cards have different points associated
right,
with
exactly.
them. So the quote is, and this is normally like after I have made a pretty aggressive bid to get the kitty.
Yep.
I will say, man makes the trump. Trump don't make the man.
Ooh. Yeah.
It sounds politically loaded at this point in our history.
I know, it's not.
It has nothing.
We're reclaiming that word.
But the premise is, hey, it doesn't matter like what everybody else has. I'm going to be the one who steps in here and takes control of this
right.
because I have the opportunity to.
Right.
And then I'm going to decide what has value in everybody's hands.
Yeah. Because in some ways it's you enter the game, you enter the situation,
the arena
and you say, I see what's happening here.
Yeah.
You're not a big risk taker. You often risk too much.
Yep.
You
can bait people into
exactly.
thinking that
that
they're the man.
Yeah. And it's reading the arena, the room, the situation. It's understanding what you're
in. But the quote at its most basic level is trust in yourself.
Right.
Believe that if you are given the tools to succeed or have the opportunity to go get the tools to succeed, you can make it happen.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and that's the thing. I don't know why so many can't just simply trust themselves. I mean, obviously it's because someone has doubted them over and over again, or they have taken the risk and and it hasn't worked out. And but
what I love about Rook,
I don't know,
as it applies back to life, is let's say you get the bid, you make the trump,
right,
and it goes poorly. You just play the next hand.
Yeah,
like it's not that bad to. Right. To, at least you dictated the terms on which you failed.
Right. Right.
And you probably learned a little more in the process because you engaged harder.
Yeah. And I think that everyone thinks that it's just one game. It's just one round.
Right. No, but again, life is long.
Life is long. And there are many rounds.
And so if I personalize that a little bit, which I think is what you're supposed to do on a podcast.
Absolutely.
That has looked like me betting on myself some. Every time in life where I got in a job and I thought, I can do more than this. I was in an industry where you basically had to take those reins by yourself and go, I'm going to go freelance, or I'm going to start my own consultancy. And that's how I'm going to enjoy my work more, make more money, have more flexibility, more autonomy, and just kind of like, I've had to go seize those moments because in the companies I've been in the past, they're not really set up to pay a guy like me more money to do the same thing I'm doing.
Right. That makes sense.
And I've never worked in a company big enough to have a ladder.
Oh, yeah. 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 And no, that's really good. But I guess my question then would be, what do you say, or what have you said to yourself, and what might you say to someone else who, because here's what I would say for most of us, for a lot of people, is that the reason they don't take the risks, the reason they don't go and start their own shop, right? Some of it is attached to, I don't want to let these people down. This team, I love this team. So, I love these people. And if I leave, like I'm letting them down because now, I mean, I know that like they don't need me, but like I don't want to. So how do you combat that? Because I think we all have some of that in us, some more than others, because some people are still in the place.
If you weren't replaceable in that scenario, the company would pay you more. Like they would do what it took to keep you. So odds are you're actually replaceable.
Which is a tough pill to swallow.
But like, cool, I'm not like the best ever at such and such. Like, right. Like that's okay. There's a lot of people in the world. I'm not that special. I'm not that unique that for this specific set of work, I'm the only guy in the world who can do it.
Right.
A lot of people can do like healthcare design work. So
you're not the only
I'm not the only guy. Breaking news. So what you have to have is a belief that you could go do a little more than that on your own, but you also, and here's where we get back to Rook. You have to have a teammate who trusts you and kind of hypes you up to go do that.
Right.
So, you know, my main Rook teammate is our friend Baker.
Ooh.
And we know, we have like total faith, like, hey, you want to go get that kitty? You go get that kitty. I trust you.
Wow.
And I got your back, and I'll be on the lookout to make sure that as we're playing these hands, I'm protecting you when I can.
Yeah.
And so in my personal life, that's Heather going, you can do this.
Yeah.
You can. I trust you. I trust that if it doesn't work out, you'll realize it and you'll make a change.
Yeah.
And you'll fix it. But without her going, you can go back out on your own. Like you can drop your health insurance and pick it up just for us. I believe you can do that.
So I wonder, you know, for those that are married or, you know, are in a very, you know, committed relationship, that's an easy person to say, oh, okay, this is the person that's hopefully going to be my partner in this, mm-hmm. and it's going to watch my back, trust me, let me do my thing. For those that don't, I guess it's just like, hopefully throughout your life, someone has emerged.
Totally.
That has been that person, like.
Yeah, and I've got those baker, people, right. too, that are outside of
those,
my
yeah.
family who yeah. go, like, I was trying to quit a job the second time to go back out on my own, and I was talking to a mentor friend, and he said, what are you waiting on? You've got the tax returns to prove it. Like, I had already been on my own once and right. succeeded. He was like, what are you?
Yeah.
He was like, you're just delaying it. He's like, this is what you want to do.
Yeah. And here's reality too, what I think is, we all have those people in our life that we know, if I talk to this friend or this mentor or this family member, they're going to tell me to do the thing.
Right.
Or they're going to tell me.
I'm certainly seeking out the right people in that situation.
Yeah.
Like, I remember the first time I was trying to quit, and I had a conversation with my dad, who's actually an entrepreneur and has worked in independent pharmacies his entire life. But he has kind of done the same thing for a long time. He is kind of going, I don't know, man, because it was so foreign, mm-hmm. such a foreign concept for me to go freelance. He wasn't willing to say go for it, and rightly so. He had no box for what I was trying yeah. to be.
And it's good to have the no people in your life, or the hesitant people,
because
then you do the work of like trying to convince them, which is trying to convince yes. you, right?
Yeah.
yeah. You need the no person that's like, I don't know. You're like, but listen, here's why I think the yes person, you're like, and then you're like, I don't know. And you need the yes person that says, no, here's why you do it. And so you need both of those. And I think sometimes people only have one, and that can be dangerous in either direction. Huh. I like it. So wait, your father.
Yeah.
Entrepreneur too.
Debatable, but yes. He joined my grandfather in their independent pharmacies.
So do you think any of that has any connection for you to why you eventually are now in your own way?
I think so. I don't know how much of that spirit was passed on. I know that I watched him be the boss and make the rules, and I probably took on a lot of that. I know that my grandfather retired at 39, and I was like, yeah, into that.
But I mean, like, I feel like those that were brought up in families that have entrepreneurs in them, they tend to end up being entrepreneurs themselves.
The risk has been normalized.
Yeah, it's normal. Yeah. Of course. Yes, we work for ourselves. Yes, we own a thing. Hmm. So there you go. And then those that don't grow up in that grew up family is in sales or mm-hmm. in education, and they end up maybe not doing the exact same thing, but something very
right.
similar to it. Mm.
And one last thing on this quote is it's very important how you say it. It's got to come with some vibrato.
Ooh.
It's kind of got to be a shot to say, like, hey, you other team, you guys didn't believe in yourselves.
Yeah.
So it's got to be like, man makes the Trump. Trump don't make the man.
It's like that mantra in the morning. It's a morning mantra. You look in the mirror.
Oh, I pray that someone looks in the mirror and says this.
You look in the mirror. I think,
but you're also hyping yourself
you're
up.
You're hyping
when you
yourself
do it.
Up.
Because then you're going, I've seen my cards.
Yeah.
I really hope there's something special in these tools I'm going to get in the kitty.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's having the realization of knowing the cards that you have. Like, don't sell the cards you have short.
There are
you
times,
have them.
There are times where you look at your cards and you go, this ain't me. yeah. You know, like, if we were going fishing today,
right?
I'd be like, this ain't me. I'm not going after that kitty because I've never touched a hook. I've never touched a line. I've never touched a fishing pole, and I've never touched a fish.
But I love Captain D's.
Yeah.
I'll eat that all
day. RIP on 8th.
But they still have one on Nolensville, so it's okay. I'm a self-locating Captain D's. Oh, that's good. I like how we ended on Captain D's. That's good. Okay. Let's hear. You got one more, right?
I got one more.
Okay, let's get to it.
I don't know who said this. I learned it in college in one of my public relations classes, and it stuck. Tell the truth. Tell it first. Tell it often.
Say it again.
Tell the truth. Tell it first. Tell it often. Often? Often. Often.
Often.
Often.
Often.
And
dude,
there's a lot there. The times in my life where I've been the most uncomfortable with myself and with the people around me, and I've tried to cover up who I was or who I wanted to be, is when I have had secrets.
Yeah.
That were dark.
Yeah.
It's okay to have a light secret.
What is a light secret?
Light secret's like, I had an M&M and I'm on a diet. I'm not going to tell anybody I had that one M&M. That's right. A light secret.
That's a light secret. So do you think that, yeah, what, tell me more, go more into that. So, okay, when you heard that quote, so you heard in college, right?
I heard in college, and it was related to marketing, essentially. Like, hey, if you want people to understand who you are, you're going to have to be the one to say it.
Right.
You're going to have to probably be the first one to say it, because if you're not, you're only going to be reacting to what the truth the other person told was. Mm. And you tell it often as a way of kind of hammering it home to the people listening to it. There's that idea that, you know, people have to hear things, the stats are anywhere from like 3 to 7 to 21 times to remember it.
Yeah. So how do you decide what's true? How do you decide?
Well, I think we all have some tolerance for truth.
Right.
And tolerance isn't the right word. I think we all have like a truth line where, yes, we know when we've told the whole truth and we know when we're still hiding some of the truth. And different people have different levels of what the truth is.
Yeah.
And that's just going to have to be fine.
Yeah.
That's what makes some truth become opinion. That's the old, like, hey, there was a traffic accident. This one person says this one thing. This one person says this other thing. The truth is somewhere out there.
Right.
But people can only know the truth that is quote unquote true to them.
Mm. Yeah.
And so I'm just trying to meet my own truth level.
That's good.
So if I'm trying to be honest with myself about what I can do or what I've, what I'm capable of doing, if I'm assessing, you know, okay, this and this and this has happened, what is true because of that? I've got to meet my own truth level to get back to the light.
Right. So you've had this quote for a while. And when you heard it, it was in a marketing sense. You're like, oh, that's good. Good quote for marketing. When did it start to hit you on a personal level?
It hit me personally in my relationship with Heather, where I think we had been married for 4 or 5 years at this point. Then I realized, hey, I'm still like hiding some, not hiding, but like haven't told, she doesn't know all of me.
Yeah.
And I had this moment where I was like, I'm just going to need her to know every last thing about me.
So, okay, before...
Because I feel like there's a... Until she does that, there's going to be a barrier in our relationship that she doesn't even know is there.
So what was the prompt in you saying for you, like... Because obviously, like, the reason that we don't always tell the full truth to anyone is it's wrapped up in fear. Like, yeah, I'm afraid that you will not be my friend, be in relationship, step away from me, whatever, because I've now told you everything
right
about me and what I think and how I feel, etc.
You only want to tell the whole truth to people that you know can handle it. And I figured out, Heather can handle all the truth about me because of the way that she had loved me over time.
Because you probably gave out some of those, like you were like, okay.
I started dealing in some half-truths for sure.
It's like, okay. So then, continue. Yeah, go.
And then, you know, what you find is as you become a more truthful person, you become a person who can handle other people's truths.
Yeah.
Because you go, they could handle that truth about me. Wouldn't it be generous or loving for me to be able to handle other people's full truths? And for a long time in my life, I couldn't do that. I couldn't handle the full truth about other people.
Mm. That's hard. How are you with that now?
I'm great, I think. You know, like I'm to the point where I've had enough life experience where it's pretty hard to surprise me now with some truth. Yeah. You'd have to really say something wild for me to go, man,
it got me.
That I can't love you because of that. Like, I can't even think of what that would be now in life where somebody could tell me something and I go, well, we're done.
Yeah.
Because
that feels weird.
But I don't know what, I don't know if that's an age thing or experience thing or a, but there's not like, well, nothing somebody could tell me now where I go, we're done.
Well, and I think that you're right that it's only for a lot of people, it's in the revealing of your own, all that is true within you. Are you able to extend the grace that was given to you?
Totally. The more you know yourself.
Right.
The more you understand what you're capable of,
right,
which, you know, maximizes the capacity for you to know other people.
Yeah. So when, so you've had that call again, like you said, for a while. When is it like, when has it been the most challenging for you? Like something has happened.
Yeah.
And you're like, dang it, that quote.
The hardest is when you think you're past something in your life and then it rears its head again.
Ooh, yeah.
And you go, where you've already told the truth about it before.
Yep.
And you go, I gotta tell that truth again.
Yeah.
Cause you wanted to be past it. Or like I do this a lot with food. Where like food can make me feel good. I've never had a problem with alcohol or any substance abuse.
Right.
If you want to smoke my first cigarette after this, we can. Because I've still got that option available. But I grew up using food as comfort.
Right.
And still do.
Right.
And I'll look up and go, man, I've been eating like it's the last meal for 3 weeks and my body feels like it and I feel shame about it and I want to be, and the only way to like get past it is to acknowledge it and be truthful about it and get some accountability about it and go, hey, I've been eating like crap and I haven't been exercising.
Yeah.
And it's hard to say that to somebody when like in reality, all you want to do is go back and get some good wings or some pizza. Or hamburger. I don't know if you know this or not, but I'm red status at Chick-fil-A. It's probably not good.
What does that even mean?
Well, I don't want to brag, But I've
please
been
do.
I've been invited to come down and tour the campus free of charge.
Wait, what campus?
The Chick-fil-A.
No, you haven't.
Corporate campus.
Why?
Do they have? I might have gotten some free tickets to the College Football Hall of Fame.
What? How? What? Are you serious?
Yeah, man. I've got a lot of rewards. Like we could go eat at Chick-fil-A right now and not spend a dime.
And it's so. How many people get to this? So when you showed up for the tour.
I did not go to the tour, to be clear. I have not made a special trip to Atlanta to tour the Chick-fil-A corporate campus.
But you could.
I'll do that by happenstance and would love to do it, if I'm being honest. But I think knowing that I made a special trip down there for it would kind of put me in a spiral.
But you did go to the museum.
I have those options.
If you don't want those tickets, I will take those tickets.
I don't know if they're transferable, man, because they know who I am.
Well, I can pass for you, maybe.
Right. As I literally sip a Chick-fil-A coffee.
Yeah, we are not sponsored by Chick-fil-A either.
But we could be.
I mean, if they want to give me all the monies, I'll take them.
Rate, review, and subscribe, please.
Yes. Okay, so those are great quotes. Thank you.
You bet.
I want to ask two last questions and then we'll be done. I just want to end this way. Well, three. I'll change my mind. Three. Number one, karaoke go-to song.
I haven't done a lot of karaoke in my life.
Yeah.
I do have a love for it, for the medium.
Yeah. If you have one, what'd be the one?
There was a lot of karaoke at my little brother's wedding. And my whole family sang Alabama.
Like which?
Like, I'm trying to remember.
The whole catalog of Alabama? Yeah,
well, we could have. That's the important thing to note.
But yeah, but what's the song?
I think it was Mountain Music.
So that's your go-to.
And I don't think that's the title of that song.
Well, I don't.
Listen, I have a very distinct register, like octave available to my voice.
Yeah.
And so there's only certain, I can get in some pretty gnarly karaoke situations where I can't sing that song.
Yeah.
Because I can't hit all the notes.
Right.
So.
Therefore, what's going to be your go-to karaoke song?
Grundy County Auction would be up there. That's one of the only songs that I actually know the words to.
Oh my goodness, Grundy. That's a great answer. We're sticking with that.
I have done that song recently in a karaoke situation. So
I like how there's situations.
Well, I really struggle with song lyrics, like learning them and knowing them.
Well, they put the words on the screen.
Yeah, but you want to be more engaging than that.
Sure.
And so you want to pick something that you know. At least you can like really hop into the chorus with.
Yeah, I have some odd ones that I'm really good at.
Now, my brother is, a karaoke professional.
Yeah, he's good.
And Colin Baton Rouge would be his song.
Good. Okay, number two. Give me three bands, artists, that have really been a big influence or that you are often drawn back to or that are always kind of people that you kind of...
This is one of those topics where I'll let you down real hard.
No, you're letting me down. This is just yours. Yeah.
I'm just saying, like, I've always let music happen to me. I have never really
tried to
like
grab at
figure
it.
Out right. and understand the landscape. I like Matt Carney's music a lot.
Okay. One. Matt Carney.
Literally, I have to open Spotify.
Okay. That's fine. This is so funny. I like how Matt was so
I'm trying to think of the concerts Matt I've even been to.
That's fine. Just name three that come to that have childhood.
Yeah.
College.
My first CD. How about let's do that. What was your first CD, Luke?
What was your first CD?
After all the acapella stuff, it was The Bare Naked Ladies. Chickadee China, the Chinese chicken.
Okay, number, that's two, and one more.
I really like Bruno Mars.
Okay.
That guy.
He's good.
Well, that guy's music is going to be around. Like, you hear 24, what's it called?
24 Karat.
Yeah, 24 Karat. Like, that song's popular for 30 years. Period.
Oh, yeah.
That is a Jock Jams type.
He has, we've been seeking in the music, and this is a big statement, but people have been saying, who will be the next Michael Jackson?
Basically Michael Jackson. And
people thought it was going to be Timberlake for a while.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's going to be him.
So listen.
I think Bruno is the closest that we've seen right now that could be the next Michael-esque
artist. Michael Jackson is very, like, people have many hot takes, and his life was became a
I'm
thing.
Talking about his
but
music.
But people
yeah.
still love his,
I'm
music,
talking about his music,
and
yeah.
I'll go in my head, how do people still love his music?
Right.
And I'll go, oh, but if Bruno committed murder, I'd still be like jamming to 24 Karat.
Yeah. We often
Versace on the floor. You know what I mean?
Okay, last one. Three books everyone should read. Like, what are your recommendations? Three books that you found helpful that might be helpful to others if they were to pick up and read in the near future.
You're hitting me on these mediums.
I know.
That I don't particularly partake in much.
You don't partake in reading books?
I do very little book reading. One book I would say that I've been reading recently that is very strong. It's a little heady, so I'm having a little trouble pushing all the way through it, but the ideas and such are so good, is The Three Marriages by David White.
There we go. We'll end with that. Luke, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
This is fun. All right. We'll see y'all soon. Peace.